Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. We're having a little Atlanta traffic delays right now with Dr. George, but she should be here momentarily. And she has a very special guest on that we're going to transfer into the board, and we'll be with Mr. Myers just momentarily. Okay, Joe, have we made connections? It seems like we always have a little bit of a problem every now and then on timing, but...
We get through it.
But we get through it. We're troopers, as they would say.
Speak up. I can just about hear you.
Okay. How's that? Is that better?
A little better.
Okay. And Joe is an economist and has been on Dr. George's show a couple of times. Dr. George should be walking into the studio momentarily, and looking forward to that. We had a big election down here yesterday in our district, as a matter of fact. And I don't know that one representative is going to make that much difference. However, we would like to keep it as a Republican district, our representative, and it looks like it's going to be a horse race with Karen Handel and John Ossoff. But I don't know if you keep track of it. I was just curious how you felt about that as far as our economy goes and whether we maintain a good standing in Congress.
Well, you know, I've said many times that I'm very positive in the long term, but I'm very cautious over the short term, as I think a lot of the problems that need to be addressed, and I think we've got solutions on the table that'll do that, may not actually be implemented as quickly as people would want to believe. And I think the equity markets and certainly the belief people have in the economy may have at this point gotten ahead of itself. That's the way I see it.
Hmm. Well, so what's a person to do?
Well, I think at this point you want to protect your capital. You want to take money off the table if we see any further strength in the equity markets, which over the short term I believe we will. I am of the belief that we've seen a top in the equity market at 21,169, and I think we've seen a top in the S&P right around 2,400. Doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that we can't go back to those levels, but I think the upside beyond that's extremely limited, and I think the downside surprise could be very great. I think you want to protect certainly your IRA, your 401k, and you want to prepare at some point, I believe, for significantly lower prices.
Do you feel like this is just a major correction, or, you know, is it time really to step back and take a breath as far as our economy goes and then start, I don't want to say start anew, but start at a different point and go forward?
Well, I think we may be seeing the end of the bull market. It's been an extremely long bull market. I think if we look at history, the only other bull market through history that's lasted longer than this one would be the bull market of the 1920s. And I think when you take a look at the longevity of this market and certainly the percentage in which it has gone up over the last 8 years, I think we're seeing an ending rather than a new beginning.
You know, Joe, do you feel like this bull market has been on a really solid foundation? I continue to feel like it's been, I hate to say this, but some of the bull market has been based on air instead of on concrete. Does that make sense?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think when we talk about Wall Street versus Main Street, certainly we haven't seen the good things that were part of this bull market filtered down to working class America. I've said many times this is an extremely overvalued market. It's a widely overextended market, and it continues to be rapidly euphoric. This market has not, at this point, I believe, factored in the negatives that I think at some point will become reality as we move forward. This market, since the election, and I'm sure you'll agree, has gone up based on a lot of good news. And I think the question is, when we start to see some of the bad news that's going to work its way through the pipeline, what will this market do when it's confronted with that? I think that's the surprise as we move forward most people are not prepared for.
Do you feel like politically our Congress will step in and try to work together if things start falling as opposed to seemingly?
Oh, I think honestly, when you talk about health care, I wasn't surprised to see the way that turned out. I think the biggest surprise moving forward is everybody expects the tax cut legislation to get passed in 2017. And I think when we take a look at what happened with health care, I don't think it's realistic that we see the tax cuts that have been built into what this market has done actually take effect in 2017. So what I'm saying is I think we're going to see maybe something on health care as we get into the latter part of 2017. But I don't believe we'll get the legislation passed on the tax cuts, if at all, till probably 2018.
Well, we have a guest visitor. No, she's not a visitor. She's the host of the show. Dr. George has gotten here, and I'm going to turn it over to her.
Hey, Joe. Thank you for joining me today.
Good morning, Dr. George. Thank you for having me as a guest. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, too. You know, I was just listening in on what you guys are talking about, whether the health care bill will pass. I know what I think should be done in the bill, but from your standpoint, what is the main tenets of the best health care bill that they could pass that would actually help the economy and actually help people save money from an economist's point
of
view?
Well, we have to make, quite frankly, and I'm sure you'll agree, health care affordable for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the cost of health care is prohibitive for the average American. I think that's the biggest problem and the hurdle as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger question is, if we make health care affordable for all Americans, how do we pay for it? That's the bigger question.
What would you do? If you could run the
budget, we've got to bring the money back into the system, and we've got to be able to fund certainly what we'll be doing as we move forward with health care. That's the challenge, is the way I see it.
Right, but more specifically, what would you do to bring the money back? Is the president going to Wisconsin yesterday talking about buy American, hire American? Is that rhetoric, or is that something, in your opinion, that would actually move the needle?
Well, I think we've got to bring the decent-paying jobs back to the shores of America. I think we've got to certainly support our own and buy American-made products. Will that in itself be the answer to the economic ills facing America? I think it's wishful thinking, but I certainly believe it's a major step in the right direction, that's for sure.
Well, if we're so far over the edge, then are you saying that we should just let it go? Let it find its own level and then try to rebuild it? Or is there something that we can do to stop this? You know, I think it's a crash coming, right? Is there anything we can do to stop that or lessen
it? Well, I think we've got to see decent-paying jobs once again be created in America. We've got to allow working-class America to earn a decent wage. We've got to retrain a lot of people so they can be meaningful and purposeful as we move forward and rebuild the industrial base of America. You know, when you take a look at the dismantling of the manufacturing base of America, and as you know, Dr. George, it started in the late 1970s, and it literally destroyed the manufacturing base of America over the following decades.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be known, and I'm sure you remember this, as Smokestack America in the 1950s. We were the largest steel producer. We were the largest manufacturing combine in the world. And we started to export our manufacturing and our decent paying jobs overseas, and we've now created a situation where we service foreign made products, and we basically manufacture at this point very little here in the, on the shores of America. We've got to give the incentives to rebuild plants. We have to give the tax breaks to re-equip them. We have to have money to certainly retrain our workers. This process is not going to happen overnight, nor will we see the results of it as quickly as a lot of people believe.
Mm-hmm.
As I was saying earlier in the show, I think when we look at the stock market and we look at the belief people have in the economy because of what the markets have done, we are not prepared for any disappointment as we move forward, certainly with what we're going to see with legislation that's before Congress, nor are we prepared at this point for a long overdue economic weakness and or falling stock prices. This market has gone up literally in a straight line, as you know, since the November elections. It's gone up predicated on a lot of good news and a lot of things happening that may or may not take place, I think, as quickly as most people would like them to. I think that's the major surprise and possible disappointment as we move forward.
Well, I'd like more clarity because I'm not a stock market player. But what does it mean, or does it mean nothing, then, to have these stock prices go up, to have the indexes go up? How is that so disconnected from the economy? Because it seems like it's not connected at all for what you're saying. It's fake.
Well, I think the stock market's an illusion. I think when you take a look at the level that stock prices have obtained and you take a look at how it is filtered down, I think, to working class America, I think you have a dichotomy. I think you have rising stock prices. They're going up for one set of reasons, but I think when you take a look at what's going on in the economy and certainly the benefits, which I believe at this point are very small as we talk to improving the average life as we know it for working class and the poor, I think it's been a major disappointment.
Why are we? Who stands to gain from the stock market rise? If it's not the working people,
Dr. George, I can just about hear you.
Who stands to gain from the stock market rise? If middle America and the working America is not gaining, who's winning this battle? Who's making the money?
Well, I think when you take a look at the largest investor groups in these markets, you've got insurance companies, pension funds, hedge funds, banks. They've been the major beneficiaries of certainly rising stock prices over the last several years. I think people lose sight of the fact, as I said earlier in the show, that this current bull market, which I believe, again, I'll reiterate, is coming to an end, is the second longest bull market since what we witnessed in the 1920s. I think when you take a look, more importantly, from where this bull market began, as you know, it started March 2009, Dow 6,470 and approximately 670 in the S&P. So you've had roughly a 14,000-point move in the Dow, and you've had roughly an 1,800-point move in the S&P over the last 8 years. I think when you take a look at the economy, when we talk about the serious recession we had in 2008 and 2009, for the average American at this point, they're still awaiting the recovery that is not reflective in what we've witnessed in rising stock prices over this period. That's the problem.
Well, how then, if the wages are stagnant, the unemployment rate is still where it is, how on earth are these companies making money? If the economy is bad, how can their stock go up? Is it the public-private partnership? Is it the fact that the government is basically giving them corporate welfare?
Well, what they do is they buy back their own stock. They're buying back their own stock. They're not building new plants. They're not equipping them. They're not retraining people. They're investing basically in their stock.
Well, how does that make it go up then? If they're buying their stock, then other people aren't seeing the value of it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, there's less shares in the float when they buy it back. So when there's less shares and the price is rising, it doesn't take much to keep it going up. Plus, we have money coming in from all over the world. You have money coming in from Europe. You have money certainly continuing to come in from these pension funds and mm-hmm. hedge funds that continue to invest and invest very, very heavily in the market. And you have a lot of retirees that have their pension funds certainly pegged to what the stock and bond markets do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the average working class American, you know, they have very little money, if any, in stocks and bonds. Most people, if they're working class, what monies they have in a bank account for emergency purposes.
That's not helping them either. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Mr. Joe Meyer, the founder of StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. And, Joe, I feel like I'm asking the same question because I feel like I'm speaking for people out there who really, really want to understand why they're not having a stake or seeing the benefit of this supposed, you know, bull market. Is it? And I know you've said it 1,000 times, and I hate to reiterate it, but I'm trying to get my head around this. It seems to me that there's, and correct me if I'm wrong, a two-tier economy where those who are the corporate side and the people who invest in bonds and stocks, et cetera, are in a whole different world than
Absolutely.
The actual people who are doing every day, you know, creating something every day. Yes?
Well, I think the answer, quite simply, is the stock market is not reflective of the true economic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could say it any straighter.
No, that's pretty straight. So we watch, money, you know, Barney and all these and these business programs who are loving the fact that the stock market is going up. They're completely disconnected from everybody else, it sounds like.
Well, when you take a look at working class America, and I think we touched on this, Dr. George, in a previous show, you have wages adjusted for inflation that have been flat since 1968. When you take a look at the cost of living and you take a look at the ability of people to keep up with inflation through wages, it's been literally impossible. You've seen housing go beyond what the average American can ever afford. You've seen automobiles go in price beyond what most people could ever afford to pay for a car. We've witnessed the cost of a college education now go beyond what anybody could realistically ever expect to go through college and pay back.
Mm-hmm.
And we see people now living on very small amounts of money through retirement, concerned that they'll outlive their savings. You know, this has not been a good time for everyone going back over many, many decades. And you're absolutely right. We do have a two-tier economy. We have an economy for the working class and the poor, and we have an economy for the elite, certainly corporate America. But, you know, when you take a look at the retail store closings, this economy is getting worse.
Yeah.
When you take a look at Sears, as you know, by 1960, one of every 200 Americans worked for Sears. One of every three people going back in 1960 carried a Sears credit card. Sears is now following what we witnessed with Blockbuster, A&P, what we're seeing with Payless Shoes, mm-hmm. Radio Shack, JCPenney. Online shopping, I believe, is going to be the death knell of a lot of retailers in America. We're seeing the high-end retailers now close. We're seeing the high-end restaurants close. This economy is tightening as this market's giving the illusion that we're shortly on the road to prosperity. I don't see it.
I think you've made a really good point, and the thing that I've noticed is that Amazon has become the Walmart, the online
Absolutely.
Version of Walmart. Yeah, and they're really mercenary. I mean, they just grab every single coin that they can in profit, and you're supposed to like the fact that your product is on there and be happy for it. But I don't think the retailers are making that much money either. People, I have a book on Amazon.com. I mean, they're taking basically 70% of the profit, and I find it, you know, intrusive, to put it mildly, to have a book on there because they're making more money than I am. And
Well, you know, I've had people ask me many times, and they've said to me, We know everything is out of whack when we look at wages and we look at prices. What would it take to bring things back to a level playing field? And you know what the answer to that is?
What?
We'd have to cut prices in half and double wages to even begin to address that. That's how bad things are, out of touch with reality. Double wages and cut prices in half. What do you think of that?
I think it's awesome. But I wouldn't have a problem with that at all as a small business owner, to be quite honest. And, you know, how do we get people to do that?
Dr. George, if you don't mind, I would like to make people aware of something, and I think that Amazon may have, or we may have located Amazon's Achilles tendon in that, Joe, I don't know if you're aware of it, or Dr. George, if you're aware of it, but I ordered some stuff from Amazon a few weeks ago, and I wanted it, I didn't want it next day, but I did want it in 2 days. So 2 days came and went, and no Amazon. No. The thing that Amazon, and I think they're making a fatal mistake, is that they're beginning their own delivery service. I had always either gotten Amazon by FedEx or by UPS. I think generally FedEx. But I got it by, it's called A Logistics, and that's Amazon Logistics, their own delivery service. They were like 3 days late in delivering it. It was almost impossible to try to track it. In fact, it was impossible. They made the delivery, the first time they made the delivery to my office, my business office, at 7 p.m. Now, I don't know how many businesses are open and taking deliveries at 7 p.m. We had a little go-around. We're still having a little go-around that they didn't deliver on time. But I think this, if they continue the way they're going with trying to be everything, they're going to be nothing.
They want to corner the market. They want to be the only place you can go to get your product. It's, monopolies don't work. They never have a good service. The price always goes up. And you're going to pay for convenience, just like the people did with Walmart. I remember when it started to get huge and those mega stores came online, every single mom and pop store within any reasonable vicinity was gone within a year. And this is the same thing happening online. I don't know. How do we change the mindset so that people can see the long ball? It's not how much you save up front. It's whether you're going to be able to afford to buy the product at all down the road if you don't have a job.
Well, you know, I've said many times, and people have asked me, is the American dream dead? I don't believe, because I want to be optimistic, that the American dream is dead. But I've got to tell you, Dr. George, I do believe it's been very badly wounded.
What can we do to, first of all, you have to know that, you know, have an awareness of the fact that it's so damaged. But then we have all of this social construct that if you want to, you know, honor your country, then somehow there's something wrong with you. So doesn't that make it difficult for people to say, let's just pull back and see where we went wrong so we can correct it? That's being completely blocked in socially in this system, don't you think?
Well, I think we have to get back to the basics that made this country great. We've got to get back to honesty, integrity, the truth, character. We have to keep our word, and we have to do the things we promised to do. You know, it's a sad day when promises are made to be broken and lies are made to be upheld. Do you ever hear that statement?
No, but it's what we're living in that right now.
Absolutely. We are making history, and I think we'll look back on these periods someday in the distant future, and people will wonder, what were Americans thinking as they went through the trying times that they were certainly part of? If we don't learn from our mistakes, if we don't understand that we can do things better, if we don't understand that we're all one people, how are we ever going to turn this thing around? You know, we've got the greatest minds, we've got the technology, we've got the will to move forward, we've got a very, very hard-working working class in America that wants to contribute to make this country a better place. The key is we have to start somewhere, but we've got to come back to the basic values that I think are the tenet of what's going to be needed to make us great once again. What do you think?
I think you're right, but I think that there is this prevailing mindset, whether it's the government mindset, the corporate mindset, with the people who have the means, where we're not going to play the game. We create the rules as we go along, and nothing's ever enough. This, how much money do you need to make in your lifetime to make you happy? You can't possibly spend it all in a few lifetimes, but that's never enough for these people. They want absolute control, and I think that that's a major problem. We've moved from wanting to be part of a, you know, help our neighbor, be prideful of who we are as a country and a people, to how much can I get? And on the opposite side, the people who don't have a lot, their mindset is, you took it from me. So even if someone is doing well, working hard, doing what they're supposed to, what you just described, either they're preyed upon by the people who don't have because somehow they took it from them. They didn't want to get a job, they didn't want to work two jobs, but you still took it from them. Or the government or the corporate interest who want a monopoly. They don't want competition because competition means that they'll lose in the end. This is a completely corrupt system,
well,
in my opinion.
I think also to take it a step further, and I don't know if you'll agree, I think we are responsible for one another, whether we want to acknowledge that fact or not. Mm-hmm. We are.
We are, but we also have, we all have to pull our way. Like, I have no problem helping somebody who can't help themselves, but I do have a problem with somebody, you know, sucking off my labor and telling me that what I provide is a right for somebody else. It is not. And once you have that mindset, then they get to decide how much you make, how hard you're not working hard enough for them. And everything that you gain is somehow, it's a zero-sum game. Anything that you succeed in, somehow they've been denied their fair share and you owe them. That's not a system that I want to come online and continue, do you?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you're absolutely right. We have to get back to the basics where a man's hard labor is certainly recognized and compensated. And we are responsible for ourselves. And, you know, we can't look to the system to be beyond what it necessarily can provide people over the short term that want to turn it into a lifetime kind of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got to create the incentives where people want to work and certainly be part of what we're going to be doing as we move forward. You know, I think we've taken care of a lot of people far too long, and I think we're reaching a point, honestly, where we can no longer afford it.
I think you're right. And actually, I want to ask a question about that, but let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Mr. Joe Meyer, the founder of Straight Money Analysis. And, you know, Joe, before the break, I wanted to ask a question because I see in Europe, and I think Sweden has been talking about this, if they haven't already done it, is giving people a minimum payout just for breathing, you know, as if that's supposed to make people feel good about themselves. Is that the direction that you think that we're trying to go? And if for a society that decides to do that, what's the detriment, in your opinion, to the economy when governments do that?
Oh, I hope it's not the direction we're going in, because I don't think it's going to be the future of this great country.
Mm.
Do I think giving a minimum payout is a good idea? Absolutely not, but that's one man's opinion. I think we've got to create a independent society, and again, the point you touched on, we all pull our weight. I don't think there's any way that a society can continue to be democratic if we get away from that.
I mean, whoever controls the pocketbook has the power, ultimately, right?
Well, that's what they say.
Well, I would rather control my own money than have the government dole it out to me in an EBT card or whatever they're going to do, student loan, mortgage, whatever they're giving, they have the ability to take away or pay late. You know, I have friends who live in socialized countries where most of the people are government employees. I mean, that's the biggest part of their economy. And when they don't make payroll, who do you go to? I mean, weeks where they get partially paid, not paid, and they're stuck. You can't even, you know, plead your case because it's not a private entity. So I don't see a good upside to the government having more control than it does now over your paycheck.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm not an advocate of a dependent society, that's
mm-hmm.
for sure.
No, it's a very bland and I think unequal society, because those who are waiting for that check or that transfer once a month, their life falls and it live on that. I mean, when they don't get it, what do you do? You know, what in your opinion, I know we talked about it at the beginning, but I want to revisit it. The Congress is a joke. I'm sorry. I've been up there. They talk nonsense 24/7. They make it sound like they're going to do something until the next election cycle and they disappear. Now we're talking about, we're not going to, well, this is specific, right? They're not going to follow what the president ran on, right? Let's get tax breaks. Let's fix the economy. Let's make it more worker friendly. Now they're talking about, oh, we can only pass maybe corporate tax. What happened to the individual tax cut? I mean, if you had to pick one, would you offer an individual tax cut or a corporate tax cut to help boost this economy? Which is better?
Well, I think an individual tax cut.
Okay, good. I'm not going nuts. So do I. I'm thinking that too. Well, if you give a corporate tax cut, all they're going to do is what they've been doing, which is put the money back in their company and pay their CEOs, right? I mean, that's what the banks did when they got their big TARP bailout. They didn't give any money to anybody. They took it and ran on zero interest to top it off. So why are we doing the same thing expecting a different result? I think I know the answer, but I want to know what your opinion is.
Well, you know, I think when we look at, and again, we go back to what the markets have done since the election in November. You know, the markets have gone up basically for three reasons: the purported tax cuts, less regulation, the spending boom, money going to be built on rebuilding the infrastructure of America, which should have been done, quite frankly, decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, when you take a look at the purported good news that's going to be happening down the road, and you take a look at exactly what has taken place in less than the first 100 days of the new presidential term, you have to say to yourself, are we prepared for any disappointment as we move forward when we look towards the economy and or the stock and bond markets? Quite frankly, I have to believe, Dr. George, that this market at this point and this economy are not prepared for disappointment. I hope I'm wrong on that point, but I think when the reality sets in that we don't get the tax cuts and the legislation as quickly as people would want to believe, this market and or this economy is going to head south and head south in a hurry. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're right. But I think of it as a global picture as well. I mean, I deal with it from the healthcare side, and I've seen the healthcare system drop in value, in performance, in every way possible, in an attempt to make it sync with the global system, the global healthcare system. I'm starting to think that the economy is the same way. You know, we can't be number, they don't want us to be number one. They don't want us to be independent as a country. They want everybody to be part of a whole. And if you continue this process, there's no reason, really, why you cannot give a tax cut to working people. 30% of us don't even pay taxes, right? Federal income tax. I read that recently. That is true, right?
Yes, it is.
So why can't you give a relief to the middle class who's holding up the weight for everybody? We're subsidizing the corporate folks who don't pay very much, if any. We subsidize the people who don't pay any taxes, and they won't give that engine a break. Why?
Well, we have to restructure the whole system. The system, from a systemic standpoint, has many, many problems. They've been built into the system over many, many years. And quite frankly, in my humble opinion, there's not going to be a simple solution that's going to begin to address what needs to be done.
I think you're right, because I don't think the people who are pulling the strings want a change, because it's all about competition. If you free people to find their own true value, not what you said it is, not what everybody says it is, but what they really love doing, what they want to do, those people will find a way to be entrepreneurial, to become competition to the people who have the pockets of the government, who have the legislation in their favor. I've never seen so much jerry-rigging of a system in my life. I mean, from a healthcare standpoint, you can't open up your own surgery center because of restrictions and the perceived, if you open up a surgery center, that the hospital will go out of business because they can't compete. They've actually legislated these things into existence, so you keep the status quo, you make it too big to fail, and then it never still has enough money. It's always crying poor. So we're in the same situation. I know, have you seen the articles about UnitedHealthcare, about how they've made more money this quarter than they thought they were going to because they dropped out of Obamacare? I mean, it's amazing. So they get to give less care, make more money, yet they're still in a position to call the shots.
Well, I think when you talk about health care, and I'm sure you'll agree, over the decades, it's become to the point where it's prohibitive for the average working American. You know, the cost of health care has gone up with everything else, and it's gone up probably a hell of a lot more than a lot of things we use every day, and it's gone up in cost for good reason. I think when you talk about the pharmaceuticals and you talk about the cost of treatment and the cost of medication to treat and treat effectively, that's another tenet of health care which is beyond the reach for most average working class Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have the best health care system in the world? I'd like to believe we do, but we also have the most expensive.
Well, because we're subsidizing everybody. I mean, if you go down to Mexico or anywhere out of the country, you'll get the same medications for a fraction. I mean, it's amazing. $20 for things.
I think a lot of physicians are handicapped as to how they'd like to treat many conditions because they simply don't have the latitude to treat and treat effectively cost-wise the way they would want to address conditions and address them very effectively. You agree with that?
Yes and no. I think that the doctors who are thinking doctors who are outside of the corporate grid do find a way to treat their patients in a manner that's efficient. But the doctor's training has changed. So now you're losing that connection with reality. And it's all about numbers. You're not even treating diseases anymore as an individual. It's all about numbers and treating, pre-treating, post-treating, it's all about that. So there's no thought involved. It's been corporatized and monetized. To me, that's the major problem. And unless doctors take their power back and become physicians and not, you know, agents of the government, we're in for a long haul of sicker people on more medication going into hospice earlier. That's what I see. It's not even what I think. It's what's happening. But unless you're in it, you don't get to see that.
I think in a previous show we discussed how you believed education and prevention's every bit as effective as treating with medication.
No question, and cheaper too. I mean, yeah, absolutely. But that's not the doctors who think that way and those who practice that way have been put out of business or been forced out of the country or sometimes don't survive, which is...
I think the other point you made in a previous show was identifying a condition, isolating it very early, treating it very effectively, and having a very good long-term prognosis.
No question. But it also depends on having a relationship with the patient.
Very
so that
important.
You can educate them. And that's where I think our system is now. I mean, from an economic standpoint, it's all about taking your power back, isn't it? If, as an individual, what do you counsel people who come to you and say, how can I put myself in the best possible position to ride out this storm? What do I need to do? What do you tell them?
Well, I think you have to fall back on your knowledge, you have to fall back on your wisdom and your experience that you've accumulated through many years of practice. I think that's the key. I think you know what's worked in the past, and I think you now know what'll work in the future, and you have to prepare to certainly maneuver these times that we're going through until we see an end. You know, will this end? At some point it will. The question is, how long will it take and what will it take to bring about the changes? I think America's in transformation. I've said that in a previous shows we've done together.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is great, but I think the changes as we move forward are going to be even greater. You don't fight change, as I've said to you many times, you go with it. Some people can't accept change, they can't adapt to change, but inevitably at the end of the day, you're going to change whether you want to or not. The question is, can you adapt and adapt as quickly as you need to be part of the changes and certainly benefit from them? I think that's a decision each of us have to make individually for ourselves and our family.
Well, I think one thing we can say is that you have to have the basics in order to prepare. And on that note,
I think you do.
Yeah, let's talk about those when we come back. You're
okay.
Listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, in the last segment, I was having a conversation with my producer about, you know, before the election, people were really in the prepping mode of getting everything in order, buying gold, buying silver, getting food, getting water, getting things to prepare for what if. I think that's a very tangible thing to continue doing. I trust no one except God and myself and myself. I'm responsible for me. Is that something that you recommend that people do? Because if we do have an economic collapse and the dollar value drops through the floor, you have, you know, getting $5,000 bills and such. What do you tell folks from a practical standpoint?
Yeah,
a 20-year-old doesn't have an experience.
The safety net that we have, that I think we can be part of, I think you'll agree, nothing will ever take the place to replace the family unit. I think we have to get back to the family unit. We have to understand and realize how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go through life and do it alone. You know, we all think we're beyond, you know, needing help and we're an island in ourselves. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know, we have to depend on others to certainly have the skills, the knowledge, and the wisdom in areas of expertise where we do not. I think when we talk about what we can do, and I think we look at the things we're unable to do, we have to be realistic as to who we are, what we've done, and more importantly, what we're capable of accomplishing as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
We all have different skill sets. We all have different experience, and I think it's important that we share that knowledge and experience with each other in any capacity in which we're able to share it. What do you think of that, Dr. George?
I absolutely agree. And it's not about somebody being better than somebody. We all are different. It's not about equality. It's about individuality and finding what that is and being able to support each other. As you're right, I have a skill that you don't have and vice versa. And if we can get together and speak, talk, share our knowledge. I think we'd be a lot better off than I have to have mine and I have to take it and no one else can take it from me. You know, it's like you're holding a piece of cheese or something. You know, we need to really come together. I do agree with that. And the family union has been devastated over the past 20 years. I mean, you see these scenarios where people are all on their phones and they're sitting around the table, but no one's even talking to each other. They're all texting to each other. Or now it's virtual reality, which is actually even worse. We're going to pay for that, though.
Well, you know, I think the bigger concern is when you talk to the young people and they're the future of this country and to make it great once again, and you witness the disillusionment and you witness the outright anger. They're very angry, they're very disillusioned, they're very frustrated, they're seeking answers, and they want to know how this great country could have ever turned out the way that it now is. And I think that's a good question, but I think when we talk about, you know, the anger that we're seeing in society in general, it's very alarming and very disturbing that we've become a violent society, which we're witnessing certainly worsen by the day. You know, is violence going to be the answer to our problems? Is it going to lead us, you know, down the pathway of where we have to go to bring about change? Well, I hope not. But we've gotten away, I think, from communicating. We're certainly not interested in talking out the problems that are great and affecting us all. And I think when you look at our society, we've got a lot of elders with wisdom and knowledge and certainly experience that we need now to bring to the table, in my opinion, more than ever.
Oh, I absolutely agree. But this is by design. Again, who stands to gain? If we're all fighting amongst each other, and blaming, now the blame of the day is white males, apparently. You guys are responsible for every ill that's ever happened in the universe. Once you have someone to pick on or blame, then it absolves you from your own responsibility. And then you have a puppet master, whatever that society, or if it's the prevailing mindset of what's cool, they get to keep the status quo the way it is while you're wasting your time either hurting yourself or hurting other people instead of coming together. We all want the same thing. We all want the same thing. It doesn't matter what your race, sex, anything is, to be left alone to pursue whatever God's gift is in peace without hurting other people and live a long, healthy, quality life and die in your bed at a very, very old age, you know, having accomplished what you were put on this earth to do. That's pretty simple. Anything else that gets in the way is a problem, in my opinion, but it's up to us to make the decision not to play the game. The game is rigged. I don't believe you can win this game because it's designed to see you run around a maze like a rat in a cage and not ever get where you need to get to.
Well, I think we have to get back to a society where we're accountable and we're responsible for who we are and what we do.
Agreed. And be able to take care of the least in our society and the elders in our society who actually did, you know, achieve and accomplish something. They need to have dignity. It's not that hard, really. And all these things that are superimposed in the way is all designed to distract and confuse and keep us on the same path. I mean, I'm seeing this in the whole electoral, if you want to get down to the election process, we've managed to accomplish nothing in the first, 90 days or so. There's no tax passed. There's no health care law passed. Everything is going in the same direction. And my understanding of the bill that's being crafted on the Hill right now, it's to maintain the payments to Obamacare, to not build the wall, to not make the tax. It's to do the exact same thing that's been happening. It's pretty frustrating, but it's on us to make them know that we're not happy with the situation and we're not just going to go along and vote for them the next round.
Well, again, this is the great disappointment that's ahead of us that most people at this point are unable to realize. The reality of what you've just stated has not sunk in yet.
Well, they better sink in quickly, otherwise it's going to be a grid that you can't get out of. And from a healthcare standpoint, we will be on the road to single payer, never to come back. That's really what everybody wants up there, is to have the corporate minders administer government-based insurance as a single payer. I've said it for years now, and we seem to be closer to that than we've ever been the way it's rolling out. And whoever controls the money, again, in my opinion, has the power. And if someone's going to decide that they're going to divvy up the resources like they have been in the economy, then you're going to be left with very little, and you're supposed to like it and ask for more, in their opinion. I just choose not to be in a system that there's a lack of abundance and someone's controlling me. I don't like to live like that.
Well, I think the bigger concern is what's going to be the incentive for young people to enter the field of medicine if nothing changes as we move forward. I think at some point, again, in my humble opinion, we could have a shortage of physicians.
We already have a shortage. And what they're doing is they're making, expanding the role of ancillary or satellite healthcare workers. Nurses have more power. Nurse practitioners have more power. Physician assistants have more power. And as they tend to get their level, because they're going to be too expensive, they're going to go down to the nursing aides and the nursing techs and the pharmacy techs. It's going to get less, specialized or educated in terms of time. And it's going to be farmed out to Watson, who's the IBM brain behind most of our healthcare decisions now. You make it monetized, you make it a robot-based so you can have a standard of care that is no longer individualized, and you make it cheap that way. And it will always have a medication associated with it. So if you have anything, there's going to be a pill for it or a vaccine for it. That's the ultimate goal of our healthcare complex. It's not about you being treated as an individual. It's about you as a monetized entity. How much money can they make on you before they pull the plug? I hate to say it that way, but honestly, that's the truth. It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Well, I think another problem is sometimes treating a very late illness is worse than not treating it at all.
Yeah, but you have to know when you're sick. I mean, no one's getting to this. No one's understanding this. They're so caught up with the good news of what they're being told instead of doing their own due diligence and research. I think for me, that's the most important thing. Don't trust anything Joe and I say. Go and do your research. Put the time in and educate yourself, because that's how you avoid all these traps of the bright, shiny thing, right?
Well, I think as individuals, we all have to make tough decisions that are going to certainly guide our life as we move forward. I think you have to make the decisions on the best information available. You have to understand what that information truly means. And lastly, and most importantly, you have to be willing to act on it.
That's true. It takes courage, doesn't it, though? Hey, Joe, how can my listeners reach you in the last minute we have left?
Well, you go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website. Our email is on the website. A sample issue of the newsletter is there for all to read. Just click on sample newsletter. It'll download itself. It's a full issue of the newsletter. And I'm working as we speak on the next issue of the newsletter, which will be the June 2017.
Well, good. I look forward to getting it and learning. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's always a pleasure to have you.
I want to thank you for having me, Dr. Elena. It's always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.